that.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. We are in full-fledged cold season. So everyone,
you are.
Pick a number, take your chance.
You know how on construction sites or where, you know, heavy work sites, they've got a board, days without a work injury. We've got to reset our boards, Chris. Days without Jenna Wolf having a cold.
I showed up.
We were at a career high, 31.
I showed up.
It's now back down to a big zero.
Okay, but we're starting fresh because that's how we like to do things around here. Lots to get to today. Two of the GOATs square off in Foxborough this weekend. Blake Griffin is going to sit right over there. We got a lot of questions to ask him live in studio, but we are going to start with LeBron and the Lakers. In need of a win, facing Luka Doncic and the Mavericks. Pick this up under 5 minutes to go. LeBron, watch him, spins, finishes in transition, two of his 29. Lakers up 14. It's a pretty commanding lead, but back come the Mavs. Doncic hits the three over LeBron. Mavs within eight, under 30 seconds to go. Mavs down four. Doncic finds Harrison Barnes in the corner for three. Then under 10, Doncic drives, ties up the game at 113. He had 9 of his 14 in the final quarter. After being fouled, LeBron misses the first free throw. Come on, LeBron. Collects himself at the line. There it is, the focus. And this time, he makes it. Lakers win 114-113. Lakers found a way to win at the end, something they haven't been able to do. Here is LeBron James on the Lakers learning how to finally close out games.
I'm extremely happy we're going through it. There's no, you can talk about it, you can preach about it, you can watch film about it, but the best teacher in life is experience. And it's great that these young guys are getting this experience of playing these tight, close games, and then tonight we was on the other side of it. We lost a couple when we were, you know, same one was the same situation against San Antonio, we lost. Same situation happened tonight, we won. So it's great to learn from it.
I love what LeBron said. The best way to learn it is to do it. And that's what they're doing, a lot of these close games, and they're trying to figure out how to win at the end. CeCe, are you worried about the Lakers, though, after almost blowing a lead, a commanding lead that they had with five minutes left in this game?
No, Jenna, I'm not worried. I thought they would struggle. LeBron, in two previous changes, we talk about all the time, his first time leaving Cleveland, going to Miami, we know there was a struggle there, and he had other great players, established himself, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, they struggled. Their first 20 games, they struggled there. When he came back with Kyrie, Kevin Love, both of these guys, all-stars, they struggled there. So, no, I don't expect them to just breeze through this first 15 games. No, that is part of putting the basketball team together. The part I'm a little surprised that it was going to take this long for LeBron to start to take over in the fourth quarter. Because you can talk about what you want about LeBron. He's one of the best finishers that we have. Now, LeBron has kind of deferred to the rest of his teammates in the fourth quarter.
And he did it again last night.
And it almost came back to bite him. He took over. He started dominating in the third and the fourth. But he gave them opportunities in the fourth to be able to allow Dallas to get back into the game. So I'm not as worried because I knew LeBron would be able to turn it on to be able to finish out these games. But, I mean, the struggle is real. When you put a great player together with a bunch of talented young players, you're going to have some struggles. I did think they were far more engaged defensively when they came onto the court. They had a real game plan. I think closing out games, it will be LeBron James dominating on the ball, trying to get guys good shots.
And that's what has not happened yet this year. Listen, LeBron can say all he wants that experience is the best teacher, and I get that. This should not have been a game they got the experience of being a close game. You know how many times the Lakers trailed in this game? Zero. You know how many times after 0-0 it was tied? Once. 113-113 with 7 seconds left. The Lakers jumped out early. They were up 13 points with 3.5 minutes left. And then their transition defense, most notably JaVale McGee. JaVale McGee had about a 4-possession sequence on the offensive and defensive end that were just abysmal, that let the Lakers get back into it. And LeBron did not do what he did all of last year for Cleveland, because last year's Cleveland team is the closest proxy to this year's Lakers team that we have for LeBron in the last decade, because there's not another superstar on it. In Cleveland, I mean, because Kevin Love was there, but he was in and out of the lineup, wasn't playing at a superstar level. Obviously, Kyrie was gone. And what was LeBron last year in the fourth quarter, the league's leading scorer? What was LeBron last year in close games in the final 5 minutes? The leading scorer, best field goal percentage, best PER. The offensive game plan last year for the Cavs was, if it's close late, late. LeBron's going to orchestrate everything. He's either going to get to the bucket, get himself a jump shot, or generate an open three for other guys. He's not doing that right now for the Lakers. I do not think, I know some people say he's scared. I think he's trying to let the players learn the experience on their own, but it can get late early out West. And if they would have lost this game, it would have been disastrous. It would have been giving a game away. So, listen, credit to LeBron, I suppose, for making that free throw at the end. They shouldn't have been in that position. But I want to see how much longer he's going to let potential games get away by not doing what he knows is best for the right now. He clearly thinks this is what's best for the long term, but that's only on one side of the ball. See, on the other side of the ball, that even as bad as their offense was the final 4 minutes, they got to care about defense to close out these games. They can't just give up transition layups and open threes to close out these basketball games.
Can't this team find a way to make it work both ways, where LeBron does take over in the fourth quarter, but yet the way he's always been, but yet also get the other guys involved somehow? Does it have to be one or the other?
Well, I think that for young players, and especially when you're talking about people like Lonzo Ball, it's important that they know how to assume their role. They can't just put everything on LeBron. And LeBron's doing the right thing, because they won't learn if he just tries to take over in everything. LeBron tried to allow them to be involved in closing out Dallas, but they couldn't do it. He was very, very aggressive in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter, they had a commanding lead, but they couldn't make shots, and their defense was, they didn't have the same intensity as earlier in the game. It's harder for younger players to take the importance of defensive basketball. Even Kevin Durant, when he came over to Golden State, this is the best defense he's ever played his career. Harden, we talked about how his defense has changed in the last couple of years. And these guys are superstars, so we could still expect young players to struggle on the defensive end.
And listen, you are seeing, if you haven't watched JaVale McGee throughout his career, you're seeing why, if you watch the NBA Finals, you're like, man, JaVale starts off every NBA Finals game, it seems like, with an alley-oop, a block shot, another big play, and then he's nowhere to be seen. You saw in the fourth quarter why teams have struggled to play JaVale McGee late. It's odd, because off the court, he's such a smart, learned guy. On the court, he plays such an airhead brand of basketball at the most critical times. There was a sequence where he did a running hook shot while they're trying to close out the Mavs. He then does not get back in defense and allows a dunk. And the next defensive possession just doesn't even attempt to challenge a three-point shooter, which was his man. I mean, that's a potential seven-point swing that was part of the comeback. So there are a lot of small things right now the Lakers need to button up. Most notably to me is the defense, because worst-case scenario on offense, LeBron's going to say, you know what, I wanted Ingram and Lonzo to be able to learn how to do this. What they're going to have to learn how to do is stand in the corner and hit open threes, because that's what the Cavs learned how to do last year. Their job late in games, hit open jump shots, all take care of the rest. He's trying to see if those guys can take on a bigger role. Thus far, they haven't been able to. And when LeBron only makes one shot in the fourth quarter deferring, that's going, what we saw last night's going to happen. And last night, again, was almost a disaster. It was almost the biggest story in sports today, was the Lakers blowing a 13-point lead to Dallas with 3.5 minutes.
They dominated for 3.5 quarters. The game shouldn't have been close at the end. And you could tell in the end, LeBron still was trying to. But initially, you can tell Luke Walton, the game plan was to come out with more energy. They did that.
Yes.
I like the starting lineup that they did have. Attention to detail as far as at the end, that's just younger players that I believe. I believe they need a backup center behind JaVale McGee, because you cannot have him as your primary big man for a full 82-game schedule.
100% correct. That right now is the biggest position in need. And I want to, on a positive note, Lonzo was coming off his worst game of the season. Yesterday, Lonzo was quite good. Lonzo did his role and did it well.
All right, we got to take a break there. We'll talk more about this coming up. On the other side, though, talk some football. Who's better, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers? Oh. Aaron Rodgers has the answer. That's next on First Things First. Who knows? Coming up on First Things First, Blake Griffin joins us live in studio at 9 Eastern. Plenty to discuss with Blake.
Oh, you're excited to have him.
Blake's had a 50-point game this year. We've already had a handful of those, nearly a half dozen. Steph's had one.
Clay.
Derrick Rose last night. Kimba came close, so We'll talk with Blake.
And they've had two tough back-to-backs. Boston, tough loss. Another tough loss last night in Brooklyn. Yeah. Coming to our show, credit to him. Class act.
All right, look forward to that. 9
Now, if he's late or something, I'll roast him.
We'll get to Rogers Brady in a second, but first, check out these plays presented by Geico. Derrick Rose, we just mentioned, 50 points on the night, including that beauty right there.
This was an awesome game, start to finish, from D. Rose. Had this play, had the 50-piece, had a block to seal the game, see?
Oh, he was feeling himself. I'm feeling myself.
Good job, see?
Oh, no, he looked good last night. Very explosive, handling the ball very, very aggressive. And because Teague was out of the lineup, you know, he gets the start.
But yep.
I look for him to be one of the leading candidates for sixth man of the year. Me and Deontay was talking about that this morning.
Same game, Anthony Tolliver swallows up Dante Exum's dunk attempt.
Oh, they ain't got shot blockers like that in Australia, do they, Exum?
No, Exum can get up now.
Yeah?
No, he's got some serious hops. That was a good block right there, contested at the rim. We love this too, Nick. When guys, man, put me on a poster. Right. I'm getting up there trying to block this.
Thank you. Absolutely. Go contest. You're in the NBA. There's no embarrassment unless you fall down. You fall down, getting your ankles broke, that's embarrassing.
Nuggets, Bulls, Gary Harris driving to the basket and rising up.
See?
For the throwdown.
Oh, right there. I can't see who it is, but the help side defender. He didn't want to go help. He said, no, 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 I'm staying out of here.
Jenna, you know one of the friends of the show, Izzo?
Yes.
That's one of his guys. I think one of the most underrated players in the NBA.
Oh, okay. Finally, Warriors forward Jonas Jerebko gets the steal, throws the behind-the-back pass. KD finishes.
I didn't know why this made the show at first, because I thought it was KD's dunk, but that's a hell of a pass by Jerebko. Jerebko's got a tip-in game winner earlier this year. He's been a nice little addition for him.
He does fit in well for what they're doing.
Absolutely. Need more help. Good for them. Happy for him.
All right,
moving
on.
Hardstyle group.
This weekend's marquee matchup in the NFL will take place in New England. It's Aaron Rodgers and the Packers visiting Tom Brady and the Patriots, their first meeting since 2014. Only their second meeting ever as starters. One has the rings and the records. The other is arguably the most talented. And despite what you see at a zoo, there can only be one goat. I wrote that.
That was good, Jenna.
Thank you. So who's had a better career? Take a listen.
That's, you know, end of career conversations. And you look at MJ and LeBron, you know, it's tough to settle any of those debates, because there's the what-if game and the situation game and who you played for and what era you played in. And I'm just worried about winning right now. And he's got 5 championships, so that ends most discussions, I think.
All right, CeCe, break this down a little bit. What puts guys like Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady so far ahead of the rest of the quarterback field? What is it about these two?
Okay, as far as the guys playing the game now, Aaron, the only way to describe it is if, and I listened to Steve Young talk to him. I got a lot of respect for Steve Young, undersized quarterback, had great athletic talent, speed, quickness, but didn't throw the biggest football, didn't have the best velocity, had unbelievable timing, student of the game. Later on in life, went on to be a lawyer, so you know he's a very, very smart
guy.
When
you say didn't throw the biggest football, just because you and I actually, oddly, were talking about this yesterday, didn't have a rocket arm.
No.
Didn't have
a rocket arm.
He had less arm power.
Yes, Greg Maddux. He could find every spot, every arm angle, but not as good an arm as Drew Brees. Like, when we look at Drew Brees, we look at him as a complete quarterback, but not necessarily the physical skills. Aaron Rodgers has the best arm that we've seen since Dan Marino. So as far as pure talent, he has the best throwing motion, velocity on ball, how he can vary that.
Accuracy, all of it.
And he's not a big guy. He can generate so much ball velocity, and I don't know how he does it. Quarterbacks don't even know how he does it.
I was going to ask you that. Is that just almost he has something, if he did an MRI on his shoulder, there'd be something. Remember, I hate to use this comparison. Secretariat had an enlarged heart.
Yes.
You remember that? And, that was one of the reasons Secretariat. Because Rodgers' ability to put that type of velocity on a football, the accuracy and the placement are one thing. But the zip on it, when he's not Cam Newton,
right?
It doesn't make sense. It almost seems like he has something a little genetically different with him, right?
And Michael Phelps.
Yeah, and I think, Michael Phelps with the webbing, feet,
the webbing, exactly.
Everything. Like, he was meant
to
be a swimmer. Aaron Rodgers, quarterbacks are amazed by him. So that's one of the most respectable things. People like Steve Young, people who study quarterback, they're amazed by his physical gifts and how it's displayed. Tom Brady, if there's 5 things you want on a quarterback, There's only one thing that Tom Brady is great at, and that's crunch time. That's where I would say he's the best quarterback. He wouldn't throw the best ball. He wouldn't have the best physical skills. He wouldn't have the – but he would be in the top five of all those things. Tom Brady has made himself into the best quarterback. Aaron Rodgers was given the best arm that God ever gave any quarterback. So Tom Brady, I got a lot of respect. He's created this goatness. I mean, it wasn't in on the board for him to be the greatest quarterback. When you look at the best 100 quarterbacks that ever played in it, man, Tom Brady wouldn't be your choice. Like, if we were looking for a model, like when we start going to the combine, man, Tom Brady's stats wouldn't be the one we would pick up. But you would need his brain. You would need his competitiveness. And, Jenna, the thing, as you get older, how much are you going to maybe be satisfied with your success? He's reinvented himself.
Yeah.
He's watching what he's eating. He realizes my physical skills aren't the best, so how can I elongate my prime? He's done that better than anyone. And he's dealt with the most difficult coach in Bill Belichick. So all these different things it would take to be a great quarterback, you know, Tom Brady, he might not be the best in but the clutch performance being number one. The other thing, his marks are so, so high. And he's the only one can take credit for that because he's made himself into that.
I want to show the audience two graphics. One that makes the case that Rodgers is clearly better than Brady. That's this one. Here's their average season since they took over as starters. Rodgers got him in everything. Slightly in completion percentage, slightly in yards, significantly in touchdown interception ratio, significantly in rating. If you look at what they are in an average season, it's obvious it's Rodgers. So now let me show you the graphic to make it clear it's clearly Brady. That's the totality of their career, where Brady has him obliterated. And yeah, listen, Rodgers is younger than Brady, hasn't played as much, but those losses damn near the same. 51 to 57. It's Brady's gone by 105 wins, 7 Super Bowl appearances, 4 victories. Let me do the math real quick. That's 178 touchdowns. So Rodgers going to play a lot further into the future, but he's not catching Brady in those numbers. So that is, one is the old debate, at their best, who's the best? And the other is the totality of one's accomplishments. You said Brady's only the number one in clutch. I'll add a second part of it, longevity. To do it for as long as he's done it, at this high of a level, he's second to basically no one ever. One part of Rodgers' story, though, that I think gets underrated is the degree of difficulty of the situation he walked into. He was not only replacing Brett Favre. He was replacing Brett Favre, who some fans in Green Bay felt had been unfairly pushed out. A lot of fans were sick of the back and forth, but some fans are Brett Favre loyalists. They were, last year that Favre was in Green Bay, they were 13-3 in overtime of the NFC Championship game. I think people forget that. Like, it was the undefeated Pats year. It was the 07 Patriots year. It was Favre's last year in Green Bay. Rodgers has to come in and replace that. And what he did, he came in his rookie year, even though his first year starting, they didn't win a lot. But he had a quarterback rating about 94, better than 2-1 touchdown reception ratio. He was great from the beginning. Brady walked into a situation where fans were sick of Bledsoe. They were 21-25 over the last 3 years with Bledsoe. He was pressed into duty because of injury. There were no expectations. And they had a great defense. So they walked into very different situations. And they both obviously made the very most of those situations. But I think people forget exactly what Aaron Rodgers was walking into when he finally got the starting job in Green Bay.
I think the situational aspect of this is the most intriguing. How much of their careers are impacted by the situations both quarterbacks are in? Aaron Rodgers playing for the Packers in that organization, which you know what they do or don't do and how they go out and get players. And then Tom Brady, who's playing with a Hall of Fame coach who has, they don't have a ton of talent around him, but they gave him Gronk, they gave him Randy Moss, like they give him what they need to do and Kraft has taken care of him. How much of their careers are impacted by the two situations that they both played in?
Oh, definitely. But I just believe that Tom being a student of the game, that it's a lot of times people look at us and they look who you're partnered to and they'd be like, wow, man, your partner must be really special. Tom Brady was meant for Bill Belichick.
Yes.
Because even after three Super Bowls, Tom Brady wasn't considered one of the greatest quarterbacks. But Tom Brady, he worked so hard at the game as far as throwing the football that Bill Belichick changed his offensive philosophy. That's how good Tom Brady was. He got the first in a team concept. Those first three, yeah, he got those. But after that, it became, I have to change because my quarterback's so good. Aaron Rodgers, I like the fact that he went to Green Bay. It's a special place. And, yes, they did have high expectations. But he's also the most talented. So he went to a perfect place where maybe the standard was higher compared to going to a place where football is not as important. Other franchises, not as important. So I just believe that the greatest, where they went there for a reason. There was a reason why I was cut in Philadelphia and ended up having to go to Minnesota to be able to find myself. And I just believe both of those stories and how they got there are unique in themselves and helped them evolve into the players they are.
I believe Brady and Belichick were not only the perfect combo, but if you do believe in like a sports fate, it does seem like they were meant to be together, right? Similar to Brees and Sean Payton, by the way. Both of those guys were not who they were until they came together. I think Rodgers could have been Rodgers anywhere. I think it's cool he gets to do it in Green Bay, but what if Rodgers got to play in a dome? What if Rodgers got to play in a softer division? What if Rodgers got to play with a team that was more active in free agency?
But what if Rodgers played with Bill Belichick?
Sure. Well,
Would that have worked as well?
Well, I mean, and Brady reportedly in the book that was just written said offhandedly once, if Rodgers had Belichick, he'd throw for 7,000 yards a year. Brady said that. That's in the latest Ian O'Connor book, I think it is. That's hyperbole, but I think you say 99% of the guys are system players. I think Rodgers might be that 1%. I think Rodgers might be the one guy, almost any system, almost any situation, his talent is going to shine. Brady got put in the perfect situation to exhibit that clutchness. Because if you can't show the world you're clutch if you're on a bad team. If you're on a team that doesn't make the playoffs, you're on a team that isn't well coached, he was in the perfect situation to show off what he was great at.
All right, time now for your Subway Choice moment. John Gruden and the Raiders looking to get back in the win column against the 49ers tonight. It is Thursday Night Football on Fox. All right, see what has to happen for Gruden's guys to get a win here.
Oh, man, it's been a tough week for him. I mean, it's tough when your coach is in the media, guys aren't playing well. This should be a very physical ball game. C.J. Beathard coaching the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan, what he's done with the 49ers. Given all the injuries, you would think Jimmy Garoppolo, the season's over. I believe that Kyle Shanahan is the real quarterback whisperer, and I think as his career goes on, you're going to see the impact he has on the quarterbacks. I believe the 49ers get it done tonight.
For the Raiders to win, I think they need to look offensively to what they did last week. Last week against Indy, the Raiders offense actually had a pulse. Now, defensively, they played maybe their worst game of the year, but they finally have a game that they can take certain positives from and say try to duplicate some of that offensively, and the downgrade of quarterback opponent from Andrew Luck to C.J. Beathard is significant.
But, of course, like we talked about, Jen, they got to get the ball to Amari Cooper. Oh, he's not there. Oh, they got to get to the quarterback, Khalil Mack. He got to have a big game.
Oh, he's not there.
No.
So we're good?
Good players, they ain't important.
How low is the bar for the Raiders when you're like, all they need, last week they got a pulse, and that was fantastic.
No, but listen, for a team that's been one of the more disappointing teams, they only have one win. You got to pull on certain things to say this is what we need to do moving forward.
All right, take a break. Coming up, hey, is Derrick Rose officially back after dropping 50 last night? That's next on First Things First.
Come on, Jenna, say it the way you want him to say it.
Fitty,
there you go. Yeah.
How did you know?
We've empowered you. You can do it.
I got a cell phone just like you and everybody else. And I get a lot of phone calls from people that are dying to come and play for me. I'm just telling you, they're dying to play for the Raiders. Yeah. And to have salary cap space and to have a chance to talk to the people that you really want to wear the silver and black, the guys you really want to wear the silver and black and represent this team, that's exciting.
Oh. That was a sneak peek of John Gruden's incredibly honest and open interview with Howie Long. You can catch more of it tonight on Thursday Night Football when the Raiders take on the 49ers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox NFL Network and streaming on Prime Video. Time for us to go viral. Yesterday, the Red Sox were celebrating the World Series with their fans, their fourth since breaking the curse of the Gambino back in 2004. That's usually a good thing, but this happened. Fans were tossing beer cans, and this one actually hit the World Series trophy, as Nick would say. Easy. That ain't great.
bunch of doofuses.
And then check out this sign from these youngsters at the parade that made Nick oh so happy. 16 years old, and they've seen 11 titles. An impressive run Boston's been on, Nick.
All right, do you see now why I was saying when this World Series started, let's go Dodgers? Enough. These 16-year-old sophomores in high school seen 11 titles. 11? Oh, it's what? Sickening.
Yeah, what? Even if the Dodgers would have won, they would have been still sitting there being like, hey, how you like my 10, buddy?
And by the way, 16-year-olds, I don't know where you go to school or what math they're teaching, but you ain't seen 11 parades because the Pats won in 01, which is 17 years ago. So kiddos, 10 parades. The city's won 11 in the last 16.
You think he's lying? You should have seen him in the commercial break.
It's unbelievable. 5 for the Pats, 4 for the Sox. It's ridiculous.
I have no issue with what's happening. Oh, you got no.
They're Costanzaing the trophy.
Now you're speaking my language, Nick.
Yeah.
Time now for stories to start your morning. LeBron, I love that you knew that episode, because if I said that, I'd get hammered.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron and the Lakers almost blew a late 14-point lead to the Mavericks, but in the end, they didn't. L.A. holding on for the win. LeBron scoring 29, including the game-winning free throw. Nick, what'd you make of the performance by the Kang?
It was really good until the fourth quarter. In the fourth quarter, he tried to let his teammates take it home.
Yep.
And that almost cost him the game. Now, no he doubt. Did hit the free throw at the end. Thank good. If he'd have missed two free throws at the end of this game and they lost, I don't know if we would have even been able to. I think we'd just gone wall to wall, 24 hour. We might have had to come in overnight, but it was they got away with one in L.A. yesterday.
Yeah, I don't know why the headlines read LeBron sinks free throws for a win, because they still could have lost this game.
Oh, yeah.
It was on the board for them to lose. Dominated 3.5 quarters of the game, but because LeBron tried to rely on those guys, inability to be able to score and defend late, that's what almost cost them the win.
All right, sticking with the NBA, the NBA's best team won again. Shocker, Con. Warriors beat the Pelicans 131-121. Steph Curry went off because it was his turn.
On a roll.
37 points, 7 threes, 9 assists. CeCe, how impressive has Steph been this season? First of all, who's Steph?
That's your guy.
My new guy.
That's your guy.
Okay.
Married to a Steph, now trying to bring this other Steph into the relationship.
Yeah,
and both of them are cute. Yeah. That's a good thing. It starts with cute. Uh-huh. He's played amazing. You could see the bounce back in his step. This is the best I've ever seen him. And his range at this point in his career, it's unlimited. So exciting things from Steph. I believe it's on the board for him to be the MVP this season.
I did not think it was possible for him or anyone to have a better shooting season than the one he had when he won unanimous MVP. Now, it's very early, but he's pacing towards that. This is the best basketball he's ever played, and to say that about a guy who had the best offensive season, arguably, in modern NBA history is something. He has been spectacular this year. 37 points, 7 threes, and nobody really even takes notice of it. It was great.
All right, moving on. Of all the NBA players to put up 50, Derrick Rose quite possibly could have been the least likely, but Rose did just that in the 128-125 win over the Jazz. He put up 50 points. The once bright star had fallen a long way since winning the 2011 MVP with the Bulls, but last night he looked like vintage Derrick Rose. Here he is after the game.
A lot of hard work put into my craft, and it's all about rhythm. And like I said a couple of days ago, it's all about finding my 1-2 into my shots and knowing like what to do in the game and figure things out during the game, and coming back here, like being comfortable with Tibbs and the staff and just playing basketball, just being happy playing, actually.
Nick, how impressive was D. Rose last night?
This was shocking. This was shocking, and for me as a basketball fan, it was thrilling. Last year, I sent out a tweet. Someone had taken a picture of Derrick Rose in some high school gym in Cleveland after the Cavs have moved on from him, when he didn't know if his career was still coming, even though he had made over, between Adidas and the NBA, about $300 million, working out by himself, doing layup lines. And he was just trying to get another shot in the NBA. When Tom Thibodeau gave him a shot, we thought, okay, he coached him with the Bulls. Mm-hmm. The old Timber Bulls joke was coming because they kept bringing in old Bulls who weren't good anymore. And last year it looked like he was done. Looked like his body had betrayed him and he was done. And for him to have this moment, even if he never gets another moment like this, what, as a basketball fan, sports-wise was a beautiful thing. And the way he did it, see, he drove to the basket more last night than any player did in any game all of last season, according to Second Spectrum. He was relentless. Mm-hmm. He was vintage. And he was better than I thought his body was going to allow him to be ever again. It was a special moment from a former MVP.
Yeah, I watched this whole game, but I watched for a different reason. I watched to see what was going to be the effect of Jimmy Butler. Did he not play because his body was resting, or did he demand not to play because he's trying to get out of town? I wanted to see how Carl Anthony Towns, wanted to see how Wiggins, with this leadership being thrust on him and them being kind of the biggest part of the issue with Jimmy Butler there in Minnesota. But, man, it's come to find out that I end up watching the Derrick Rose show. He was super aggressive. Now, physically, this is as good as I've seen him in a long, long time. And there were points last season when he played with the Cavs that, regardless of how much we like basketball, there were times we said he shouldn't be on the court playing. Like, he was not anywhere near an NBA player. Forget about being Derrick Rose. So for see him last night be able to take over this NBA game and to be able to dominate it. And I really believe he will be in the conversation for a sixth man of the year because you see his athleticism. He's got some range. Hit 4 3-pointers last night, distributing the basketball. And I thought it was really important, too, in the press conference right there, he talked about his shooting rhythm. That now he's discovered that typically shooting sometimes is like dancing. There's different beats when you do the tango, when you do other dances. There's different beats to those. So now a lot of guys in the NBA, they take the beats either off the dribble or they do a 1-2 count in their head. If they're going to be spot-up shooters, when they get it, they want to be able to shoot before a 1-2 count. So that's what he said. And still trying to learn the game at an older age, that, to me, is one of the most intriguing and exciting things, that he loves the game so much. And as you mentioned, in that high school gym, that's where he rediscovered his game. And that's what a lot of young players, they miss out on. Go back to the gym. Go back to the beginning. And that's what we saw with Derrick Rose.
I think some people, and we hear this in sports commentary a lot, just assume if you're rich, everything's great. And listen, I understand that having money makes life so much easier than not having money. But Derrick Rose, at some point, you get used to being rich. Like that you wake up rich, you go to bed rich. The money is not what was satisfying Derrick Rose. His entire life had been basketball. His entire life had been being great at basketball. And to have that taken from you prematurely because your body kept betraying you would have to be so torturous. He was 27 years old. And it looked like, who am I? What's my identity? And to have him have that moment, he had a great post-game interview. I'll retweet it in a second. He's crying.
Yeah.
I mean, he's crying because he's so overcome by
LeBron retweeted it, too.
Getting that moment. People should watch the full 2.5-3 minutes. It's worth it. It's a really cool moment for him.
All right, let's get back to some football now. Big NFC matchup this weekend when the Rams take on the Saints. Pro Football Focus ranked Drew Brees as the NFL's best quarterback at the halfway point this season. That is a huge reason why New Orleans is favored over the unbeaten Rams. See, what do Brees and the Saints have to do? How do they do this? How do they take down the L.A. Rams?
When you're playing teams like the Rams in Kansas City, it's going to be a constant thing. How do you keep those offenses off the field? Now, you can do it a variety of different ways. Typically, old-fashioned NFL football, we're going to run it. We're going to try to run it 35 to 40 times. We're going to make the game shorter. We're going to try to stay in bounds early in the game so the clock continues to run. We're going to be cognizant of that before we start the game, because if we can take a possession or two away from them, then that's the way to be. Both of these defenses, they have to. When you play against these teams, you have to be able to turn the ball over. So, throughout the season, we start talking about how you're going to be able to beat the Rams. How you're going to be able to beat Kansas City. You got to control time and possession. New NFL, that means Drew Brees' specialty. Throwing it short, keeping those completions going, and keeping that clock running. And when you get to the red zone, you got to score touchdowns. You cannot settle for field goals. So the Rams, they're relentless in what they're going to do to you, the pressure they put on you before you even start the game, because we know they're going to score points. So trying to play perfect football, I believe it affects you as you go on. So these teams are hard to play against, not only mentally, but physically, because you know the challenge. We got to help our defense out. It's one of those kind of games, and you have to do more than what you would normally do. And it puts pressure on the whole team.
I'm glad you focused on the Saints offense, because I'm going to focus on the Saints defense. Because there is a template, not to beating the Rams, but to coming real close. There have been three games this year they could have lost. Those are the three games this year that Jared Goff didn't play great. In the five games this year Jared Goff's played great, the Rams have won by 20, 34, 12, 7, and 29. And the 7-point game was really a 14-point game with a touchdown late. If Jared Goff plays well because of Todd Gurley and the other overpowering elements of the team, they're dominated. But against Seattle was up 7 in the fourth quarter, up 1 midway through the fourth quarter. That was a game Jared Goff was just okay. Against the Broncos, which was a 3-point game late, Jared Goff was bad. Against the Packers, Jared Goff was excellent only in the second half. Right? So the Saints' 28th ranked pass defense has to have its best game of the day. Because if Jared Goff is out there dueling, they're going to win. If Jared Goff has a great game, mm-hmm. the Rams are going to win. So getting pressure on Goff is key, which is why it's a bummer for the Saints. Their number one draft pick, Marcus Davenport, is going to miss this game. He's going to be out, I think, about a month with some foot or toe injury. But I don't think you can beat the Rams by beating them 42-38. I don't think that's a path.
There's one thing in this game I want you to watch, because it's something you picked out from the game last week, so I thought I was going to try to carry it forward. Huge advantage the Rams got in the game was special teams.
Yeah.
Mike Westhoff, special teams coordinator for the Saints. Sean Payton has an unbelievable ability in him to give him control. Watch for the onside kick. Watch for Taysom Hill, the quarterback from BYU, running some type of reverse. These are two of the better special teams. Watch how the coaches try to get some type of advantage in the special teams game. So Mike Westhall, special teams coordinator for the Saints, I believe best special teams coach in the league, trying to get an advantage for their offense or for their defense.
Jim. All right, you spent time talking about their defense. You spent a little time on special teams. We just had a whole segment talking about Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Drew Brees is very quietly putting together an incredible season. Is this the year he finally wins MVP?
So that's a very interesting question, because when you say finally, people be like, wait, what? Yeah, Drew Brees never won an MVP. Like, unfortunately for him, his best individual seasons have come in years. Guys had historic years. He had an unbelievable year the year Rodgers went 15-1. He had an unbelievable year the year Peyton threw 50 touchdowns. Like, he's just been up against some all-time seasons. I wonder if he's up against another all-time season this year in Pat Mahomes. Like, if the Kansas City Chiefs keep doing this, Pat Mahomes on pace for a 50-touchdown year himself. Mm-hmm. He's the leading candidate. But I would say the second and third place guys are playing in this game, Brees and Todd Gurley. Like, those are the guys right now nipping at Pat Mahomes' heels. And I'll tell you this, for the voters, see, if it's close, the tie is going to go to Drew Brees. If it's close, people are going to say, Pat Mahomes is going to have a lot of opportunities. This could be Drew Brees' last opportunity. If the all-time leading passer in NFL history is having one of, if not his best year ever, maybe he should be the league MVP.
What it's going to probably come down to is how strong the teams are at the end of the year. If you end up going 2-2, being Kansas City or New Orleans, because it's not going to be a numbers comparison. And you're right. You can be very, very lucky in that MVP, because a quarterback, I remember Dante Culpepper. Remember he had that unbelievable year? Mm-hmm. He didn't get MVP. That was the year Peyton Manning had that record-breaking right. season. So, yes, these seasons happen to quarterbacks all the time. I didn't know Drew Brees wasn't an MVP. I didn't know this was his first opportunity. And it becomes that team success, I believe, divides between Patty Mahomes, Todd Gurley, Goff, and Drew Brees. Those four are having the best seasons that we have, but their team success, I believe, will give the edge to that player on who's going to be MVP.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, will Baker Mayfield be hurt by the firings in Cleveland? That's next on First Things First.
It ain't going to help.
Yeah.
Back here on First Things First, joined by Super Bowl champ Chris Kenny. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jenna. How you doing?
I'm good. How was your Halloween?
Halloween was good.
What did you go as?
I didn't go as anything, but I sat there and passed out candy to all the trick-or-treaters. I feel like I have the best setup for Halloween because the kids can come through and they can get a handful of candy, as much candy as they can get with one hand. Like, I feel like we have the house on the block that lets the kids get as much candy as they want so they can enjoy Halloween.
Yeah, that's what it's about. I was trying to get a juice last night. Guy gave me a hard time. I was like, hey, where's your costume? I said, this is it. I'm going to
see, I had a problem with the kids that came by and didn't have a costume. What are we doing? I mean, I'm going to give you candy, but it's Halloween. At least put some effort into it.
I get that. I get that.
Just put a little effort into it.
A little bit. I get that. I mean, for the kids, not for you guys.
Jenna's kids weren't dressed up, but that's because their mom doesn't believe in telling them it's Halloween.
It cuts none into of that her Pilates. Is true.
She doesn't want them
I'm going
to
show
sugar.
You what happened
hey,
to my kids.
You come out with some sugar-free candy
it's
or something good for the kids.
True. My kids
like tofu Skittles. Jenna's kids be in there.
It has been quite a week within the Cleveland Browns organization. That after the firings of head coach Hugh Jackson and offensive coordinator Todd Haley. In fact, it sparked our Eric Mangini to tell us yesterday that for Halloween, he was going as a popular character in Cleveland, a former Browns coach. Rookie Baker Mayfield weighed in yesterday on all the cha-cha-cha changes around the organization.
For me, it being the first time I've experienced something like that midseason, is surprising on all fronts. It doesn't really matter if it was one or both. It just surprising to me. Never gone through it like that, and that's my welcome to the business moment, I think. You know, I expect the guys in here to be grown men, to be experienced football players and handle it the way, you know, and keep that same mindset. We have the same goal. We need to reach that and work with each other.
All right, Chris, how hard will the firings in Cleveland be on Baker Mayfield? Because I think
you guys can learn from they got fired because
they were internal discord. Exactly.
My new co-host.
Keep that off the air.
Continuity is key. Continuity is key.
I'm trying. let's talk about the future of this franchise. Is Baker Mayfield? Does this affect him now when you get rid of your offensive coordinator and your head coach moving forward?
Well, I think you make the move because it affects him, but I don't think it'll affect him negatively. If anything, it'll be a positive impact because I think this gives Baker Mayfield the opportunity to continue to develop without the backbiting, without the insubordination, without the potential power struggle between the two key figures, especially on the offensive side of the ball at the top of the hierarchy of the organization. So I think it's important to a quarterback's development when you have everybody on the same page. And it was clear the Cleveland Browns made this move because Todd Haley had his ideas about how things should go, and Hugh Jackson had his idea on how he wanted things to go in terms of play calling. And so I think it's in Baker's best interest to be able to have the people that are calling the plays and the people at the top of the organization seeing things the same way, sharing the same football vision so he can continue on the path to developing. Because it's hard enough as a rookie quarterback with the learning curve that you're going to have to deal with. Now, in terms of continuity and what they were doing offensively, I don't think you have to worry as much about that because Freddie Kitchens is going to be the offensive coordinator. He was with Todd Haley at several stops, including the Dallas Cowboys, where I actually had a chance to work with him.
So you don't think it's a step backwards?
No, I don't think it's a step backwards. And then Al Saunders is there. And Al Saunders was one of the assistants on the greatest show on turf. He goes back to the Don Coryell era of football. So there are good football people in the building that can teach Baker Mayfield the game the right way. I just worried about what was going on between Todd Haley and Hugh Jackson, and I think they've removed that distraction from that football team.
They've removed that distraction, but I do not think it's better for Baker that they're both gone. And I have reason to believe that it wasn't the plan for them both to be gone. I was talking to someone who covers this team in Cleveland yesterday, and the belief there, at least in certain circles, is they fired Hugh, they call Todd in and say, and not to fire him, and to say Greg Williams is going to be the interim, and that meeting did not go well. And that's then which is why it makes sense that the news about Todd's firing trickled out a couple hours after the news about Hugh Jackson's firing.
What do you think the reasoning behind that would be? Why would they give it to their defensive coordinator and not have Todd Haley?
To not reward bad behavior. Like, if there's a power struggle and then one guy loses his job and the other guy gets promoted, that rewards discord within the organization. And so, because I think Todd thought, I'm brought here to be the offensive coordinator, but also
right.
you can't make Greg Williams your interim coach, not with his history in the league. If Hugh gets fired, I'm going to take that seat. Right. And then he didn't get the seat, and he's not there anymore. I just don't think it can be good for Baker this week or next week to have a guy calling plays who's called plays in one NFL game of his life. It was a preseason game. Like, you had, see, you said yesterday, you can't have that much football knowledge go out the building and have it help your quarterback. I think having the Discord go out the building can help, but you didn't need to get rid of both of them to have the Discord leave the building. You only need to get rid of one of them, which I think was their original plan.
Well, I have a serious concern for Baker Mayfield. I thought Baker Mayfield was going to be a superstar in the league. And I know that franchises ruin a lot of players. Baker has the talent to be a star, but you have to be supported. The reason we had the conversation about Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady is not just because they're playing Sunday night. No, it's because they've been supported in different ways by their organization. Aaron Rodgers replaced a legend who had just finished a 13-3 season, one throw away from being in the Super Bowl, and Tom Brady playing for in the most difficult coaches in Bill Belichick. So, but they've been supported by the people around them, the organization, the people they're going to be around, man. 99% of the players I ever met in this league, man, they are system players. And Baker does not have the athleticism, does not have the height, does not have the arm strength to be able to go through this league by himself. So I'm concerned about Baker Mayfield. Right now, the most serious relationship he needs to have is with John Dorsey, the general manager. They need to sit down in a room and Baker needs to be able to ask him some real questions, grown men questions, is who are we looking at bringing in here and what does my future hold with them? Because this is important. If football is important, John, it's important to me. This is my job. This is my career. I want to be able to stay here in Cleveland. I don't want to go through two or three general managers, four or five head coaches. I don't want to be a coach killer. I want to be the solution. And where are we going? I don't care where you're going, but I need to know the direction. And Dorsey is going to answer. Who they have now, it don't matter.
Exactly.
This season is over with. Do not teach the kid bad habits before the next coach, before the next quarterback coach gets him, because they have a winner in Baker Mayfield. I just hope that they don't turn him into a loser.
And I'm right there with you, CC. And a part of the reason why John Dorsey selected Baker Mayfield over the other quarterbacks that went in the top 10 of the draft is because he's a guy that they identified as a culture changer, which they needed in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I think this presents an opportunity for him to grab a hold of this team and really impose his personality on this group of guys. I think it presents a unique opportunity for him. I'm looking at it glass half full. And when you consider the fact that there are still good football people in the building, I'm not as much so worried about him learning bad habits in this part of his development, because the development of Baker Mayfield, it's a marathon, it's not a sprint. And remember the last young quarterback who had a coaching change in the middle of the season. It was Jared Goff. So, I mean, when you consider that, you saw what happened when Sean McVay came on board. Jared Goff took off. He started to ascend in year two. So I think that there will be an opportunity for that development to continue. I'm just glad that they got rid of the dysfunction in the organization, which was the relationship between Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley.
It is not – one thing you're absolutely right on. It is nothing new for the quarterback taken first in the draft to have a coaching change. The last four quarterbacks from Jameis to Mitch Trubisky, Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield – every single one of those guys, first quarterback taken in their draft, had their coach fired the year they were taken or going into the next year. So you take a quarterback that high, it usually means you're not going to be the coach that much longer. What matters is that they get Sean McVay. They don't get, with respect, Dirk Cutter or whomever else
right,
is on the
list. One of the things we got to watch for is I trust Stan Kroenke, who owns the Rams and got it right with Sean McVay, more than the guy who's stealing gas from truck drivers.
He's just glad he ain't in jail.
Got to take a break. Can't stick around. Coming up, are the Packers Super Bowl contenders despite selling at the deadline? Next number.
Kroenke got that thing right.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, he did.
Helps marry into the Walmart family.
Hey, coming up on First Things First, Blake Griffin is going to join us live in studio at 9 Eastern. Nice first part of the season for him. We got a lot to talk about with Blake Griffin.
It's very rare we have a guest on after Canty, and it doesn't bring the average height of our guest list down.
He's actually,
and today it actually might increase it by a quarter inch or two.
Yeah, he's taller.
Yeah, barely.
Yeah.
He's about 6'9"
barely
and a half.
Taller than me.
Yeah, Chris Kane's 6'8" and a half.
Which reiterates the fact that I probably should have played another type of ball for a living, but we don't have to go there.
That's
just saying, more guaranteed money in basketball than there is in football.
Mm.
Back here in first things
first. Scars, too.
Yeah.
All right, Candy, the Packers are in the thick of the NFL playoff race with one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game in Aaron Rodgers. Yet, at the trade deadline, they dealt Pro Bowl safety Clinton Dix for a fourth-round pick. Why sell and not buy? Was it a Bull and Bears thing? Packers general manager said it wasn't. He met with the media yesterday.
I think I'm really excited about our team. I'm really looking forward to what's coming up. I think we're humming at just the right time. We got some good challenges ahead of us, but I'm really excited about where this team's headed. Yeah, obviously, Ha's a very good player, but we have a lot of bodies that have been itching to get out there, a lot of guys that haven't had their opportunities yet, and I think they're really excited, as am I, to see what they can do.
Chris, we went back and forth on this yesterday. Can the Packers still be competitive? Can they still compete this year, considering what they did at the trade deadline yesterday?
Well, they can still be competitive because they have 12, but I think this is the GM. I'm not even going to try to say his name. I'm just going to call him BG.
Yeah.
I think he's being realistic
good
about where his
football. He got a nice little haircut before the press conference. He
Okay.
I trade away, ha-ha, let me get freshened up. Yeah. Let me get my spike going.
He was
watched the press conference live because I wanted to see. With the name, I want to identify the face. I know we're going to be looking at him for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
The Packers are very, very patient. Ted Thompson did it for a long time. So I wanted to see who the guy was to be able to put maybe a personality with some of the moves.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think this is him being realistic about where his football team is at and understanding that you locked up Aaron Rodgers with a 4-year contract extension before the season. So while there is some urgency because he's in his mid-30s.
But what does that ultimately mean?
He knows he has time, though, CeCe.
Yes.
He knows he has time. It's kind of like what Brian with Rob Pelinka and Magic Johnson did in L.A. once they signed LeBron James in free agency. They didn't have to go out and make some other trades and give away assets to bring in Kawhi Leonard or somebody of that ilk this year. They know that they've got 2019 and 2020 to be able to do that in order to make the team a championship contender. So I'm looking at this situation with Aaron Rodgers, got his contract extension already on the record, saying he wants to play into his 40s. You've got some time. You'll have several off seasons to continue to develop your roster. And for a guy that you weren't going to re-sign after the next 9 games, it makes sense to go ahead and make this deal right now and get a fourth-round pick.
Man, with respect, I totally disagree with you because I understand why they wouldn't be buyers, but that doesn't mean you have to be sellers. I get why the Cavs wouldn't trade Ingram to get a rental of a Jimmy Butler for a year, but that doesn't mean at the deadline this year, That doesn't mean at the deadline this year the Lakers should say, well, we're probably not bringing Rondo back, so even if he's a valuable part of our rotation, let's move him. Like, you are in Super Bowl contention because you have Rodgers. Why get rid of one of your better defensive players, even if you're just going to have him for 9 games plus the playoffs, unless the return is so high you can't turn it down?
Well, I'm talking about a fourth-round draft pick, so that's significant draft capital, in my opinion. A fourth-round pick is somebody that you hope to develop into a starter, and you're going to have an offseason where you'll have money and you can go shopping and supplement your roster. They have options in terms of addressing the safety position. Tremont Williams is there. They can slide him back there, or they can decide to put Breshad Breeland back there once his hamstring gets right. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the quarterback position, they're set. They got Josh Jackson. They got Kevin King.
Alexander
has been a stud. So, I mean, you'll have opportunities to shuffle that back in. Look at the ha-ha Clinton Dix exit from a X's and O's point as a significant subtraction from that defensive unit.
This is what I look at. And Canty, I understand the patience part. I understand the general manager. Also, you have to understand the economics of it. When they also gave Aaron Rodgers that contract, there's certain guys on that roster, ha-ha Dixon being one of them, that they're not going to renew. Like, they're not good. So he's not going to get – he was a first-round pick. Mm-hmm. He was playing good football, but they're not going to renew him. This is not the NBA where you can say, oh, having Rondo around the locker room for those 41 road games, 41 home games. The overall length for which you have him is going to help out our roster more than trying to move on from Clinton Dix right now. Mm-hmm. So I can understand – but I'm going to give the general manager a chance. I'm going to have some patience because I've given all these other general managers. This is his first time on the scene. I'm not in a win now mentality. I'm not rushing Aaron Rodgers. I don't believe this roster is Super Bowl ready. So I'm with Canty as far as I'm going to have some patience. It's not win or bust. It's his first season. He's got to be able to make the type of changes to make this roster. I'm going to believe him in him right now where he says, I like the roster where it is. Now, this offseason, I'm going to need to see some things. He's going to have to be able to show me some things. But right now, I'm going to extend some patience to him. He just got on the job, and I don't think he should be rushed because of Ted Thompson and the other regime and what they decided not to do.
And a little side note in that, CC, I mean, I guess there is a little bit of urgency in terms of what BG is doing, because you traded HaHa and you got a fourth-round pick for the 2019 draft, as opposed to letting him walk out of the door in free agency and getting a compensatory pick in 2020. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to speed up the timetable in terms of adding players that are going to help this team compete at a higher level.
Well, listening to him in the press conference, he kind of explained the reason why he didn't allow him his contract to expire and get a compensatory pick, because he said, I plan on being aggressive in free agency.
Right, they might not get one.
And they might not get one. I'm guaranteed to get one if I move the player now. So I thought that was a smarter move, because now he's also kind of guaranteeing this he's going to participate in free agency.
Right, the compensatory pick, people should understand, it's not you lose a player, you get one. It's once they look at all of your free agent losses versus all of your free agent acquisitions. Mm-hmm. If the losses are greater than the acquisitions, you get a pick back. But here's just what I know. Because this doesn't give them, it's not like this gives them great cap relief for next year, because they weren't going to re-sign him anyway.
Exactly.
He had no money on his contract. I know the Rams have a better record, and they added Dante Fowler. I know the Saints have a better record. They added Eli Apple. Washington's got a better record. They added HaHa Clinton Dix.
Yeah, but that's not the general manager's problem.
No, I get it. I think you're acting like, or I don't want to say acting like, I think you think I might believe that Gutekunst is doing something wrong, like that he doesn't have a plan. I'm just saying in this very specific move, I disagree with the plan. It doesn't mean he's not going to have a successful tenure. It just means I do not think you're going to get enough value over the next 4 years from a late fourth round pick to justify getting rid of HaHa Clinton Dix for this year. That's all I'm saying. I don't think it's going to end up being a trade unless you hit that pick out of the park. And I know you draft a fourth rounder, you think you're going to maybe develop into a starter, and sometimes he doesn't make your football team.
Yeah.
And so I just think for this year, when you are coming off what I thought was a very encouraging game for Green Bay, to make your team worse, even just over the next 3 months, I thought that's a move they didn't have to make. It's not an indictment on what his tenure as a GM will be.
You think the team is worse today than it was a couple days ago?
I don't think we're using the right word.
Yep.
All right? The team is not as talented. But this is what I do know, all right? And I want to try to avoid this. The general manager knows more intel on the player.
Sure.
A lot of time we just jump to the player side. What's best for the player? Aaron Rodgers having the other players. Mm-hmm. But the intel on the player and what they have in their file is significant compared to what we know a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe in the intel, what they have on the player, believing that a fourth rounder right now is in the best interest of the organization.
More so.
You don't see them trade away a Pro Bowl player and a young general manager say, you know, I'm happy with my roster. I read his face. I read his body language.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying a whole lot by not saying anything on this move.
That's interesting. All right, Chris, we'll see you a little bit later in the show. Thank you. Coming up, is Tom Brady the greatest quarterback of all time? That's next on First Things First. Wait till you hear who thinks he is. On Saturday, the 10th-ranked Buckeyes look to get back in business against Nebraska at 11:30 Eastern. Then Big 12 contenders West Virginia and Texas clash. That's at 3:30. It's all coming your way Saturday on Fox, or watch anywhere on the Fox Sports app.
Okay, doing it, watching at CeCe's house, college football watch party this weekend.
Everyone's invited, everyone. We'll get to Rodgers, Brady in a second, but first, these plays presented by GEICO. Derrick Rose, what a night for him. Puts up 50 with moves like this.
I'm feeling myself. I'm feeling myself.
You singing the Beyonce. That's well done, C.
Oh, he played well last night. I had one of my NBA sources tell me, hey, Chris, you're excited this morning. Be careful with Derrick Rose. He plays awful hard. It's a style that's tough on guards. Don't know if he can keep that at that level all season. That's what my source just texted me.
He also had the game-saving block.
Same game, Anthony Tolliver swallowing up Dante Exum's dunk attempt.
I told my source, you ain't always right either.
Eat that, Aussie Exum. Aussie's an okay word to say, right? I think it is. I don't think it's a bad word. He's from Australia. I think we're good. Look, hey, Tolliver wasn't afraid of being posterized. Met him at the rim. Go get that.
Yeah, don't be afraid. Challenge it.
Nuggets, Bulls, Gary Harris driving to the basket and rising up and coming down.
Gary Harris. Where'd he go to school, C?
Michigan State.
Who coached
Coach Izzo's boys?
Tom Izzo.
And Coach Izzo's wife?
Lupe.
Lupe.
She didn't coach him.
Man, she fed him.
She's part of it.
Fed him. She got groceries in that boy's stomach. Lupe, hit me back and tell me you fed that boy. Yeah, that's how they do it, man.
Say hi. Time for in or out here. The Packers and Patriots will face off in a big showdown on Sunday Night Football.
Hold on, breaking news. Michigan State on probation.
For Chris. Lupe,
the fall guy.
Yeah. Lupe's the fall guy.
Unbelievable.
That's funny. Aaron Rodgers called Tom Brady the GOAT. CCU in or out on Tom Brady being the greatest of all time.
Yeah, I'm glad Aaron is on my corner. Of course he's the GOAT. No quarterback. Forget about the Super Bowl. Just pressure situation. Just put Tom Brady's fourth quarter stats in big games. Blows the field away.
Football, much like basketball, if you remove biases, if you remove nostalgia, it's very obvious who the greatest of all time is. Someone playing right now. We know who it is in basketball. In football, it's Tom Brady. I'm in. I'm obviously.
See what he did there, right?
I just told the truth. Professional truth teller.
Yeah, he tried to put some Tom Brady into his branding, towards
my
LeBron.
Branding. I didn't know I had a brand.
Oh, yeah. Great goatee today, too, bro. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
look
like
at
you
that.
Lost some weight, too,
got
man, around
shame.
Here and everything.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, you still got a double chin.
I know.
But you still got,
skinny
we got to do
fat,
something
man.
About
That's
that.
Skinny. There's nothing. Well, I want to do neck exercises.
You got some disease, boy.
I do. It's called skinny fat.
Sticking with legendary quarterbacks, the folks over.
How we get over there?
PFF, Pro Football Focus, put out their midseason all-pro team. Saints Drew Brees got the nod as the best quarterback. Nick, you in or out on Brees being the best quarterback so far this season?
In almost any other year, I'd be in. This year, I have to be out. When Pat Mahomes threw eight games, is on pace for 52 touchdowns, 5,000 yards, and a 115 rating, and his team's 7-1, I got to be out. Brees is second, but Pat Mahomes has been better.
Patty Mahomes has been special. Drew Brees is having a great year. It's going to be one of those type of years that it's going to be a couple losers. Guys that had, I'm talking about historically great years going to be, I'm going with Patty Mahomes. Also, if you watch the games, we're not taking pictures here, but the difficulty of what Patty Mahomes is doing. Drew Brees has been special, but Patty Mahomes and how far he's throwing the ball down the field, Patty Mahomes gets that edge.
Yeah, the air yards.
Yeah,
it's
you
a
can.
Huge
yeah, you can steal that.
Oh,
the only
I can
radio
steal
show.
That. On my
I'm
radio
watched.
Show.
Hey guys, tonight on Fox.
I got a Hall of Fame source. That's
on your little hobby, the thing you do in the pastime. Week 9 kicks off with Thursday Night Football. John Gruden and the Raiders will stay in the Bay to face the 49ers. Niners are 3-point favorites. See you in or out on the 49ers winning tonight.
I'm in. Because I believe they have an edge coaching. I believe Kyle Shanahan will be known as the quarterback whisperer. CJ, what's his name?
CJ Beathard.
CJ Beathard. I mean, he's making him look like a player. Running their offense, significant
like
injuries, Garoppolo out. I like the 49ers and their rebuilding project compared to the Raiders.
All of those things I agree with you on, except for tonight, I think the Raiders are going to win. I agree with you about the coaching edge. I agree with you about who's going to be known as the quarterback whisperer, all of that stuff. But I think the Raiders' offense showed some punch last week. Now, the defense didn't show a pulse last week, but they're not going up against Andrew Luck this week. They're going up against C.J. Beathard. I think the Raiders get their second win of the season. The Niners remain a one-win team.
One name to watch. Watch George Kittle, the tight end for San Francisco. No tight end NFL is playing as good as him. Pro Football Focus also had him at the midterm as first team.
First team
all right,
all
with
pro.
Drew Brees.
Wow. All right, on to the NBA now. Last night, Luka Doncic faced the stiffest test of his young career by going up against LeBron and the Lakers. He got off to a slow start, scoring 0 points in the first half. Finished strong with 14. Nick, you in or out on Luka being the most impressive rookie?
100% in. Trae Young's been good. Ayton's had some moments. There have been some nice rookie performances. No one's been Luka. Averaging 26-4 as a rookie, as a teenager, you got to be kidding me, man. See, I've been telling you about this kid for a year and a half now.
Yep.
Sending you clips from Eurobasket and stuff, which doesn't really help my nerd cred, but whatever. So, no, I'm 100% in. He's been the best. He was the most ready. He is the best Euro to come into the league since Dirk.
And I was concerned about him because he's been playing professional basketball. Where would he go in the NBA that would be a good fit? And what Mark Cuban does for international players, the hospitality, the accommodations, man, the way they do and the way they teach them, I believe you can be a star there. Great pickup by them drafting him. A bigger guy, too, than I expected. Sometimes when you watch those grainy videos, how big is this? Is the guy really like 6'5 and everything? I mean, the geek got me. I'm in. Yeah. Luka, man, I believe he's a special player.
He's outstanding.
All right, and we end on Derrick Rose, who was the story of the night in the NBA. He started for Jeff Teague and went off for a career-high 50 points. Chris Carter, you in or out on D. Rose sustaining his early season level of play after what we saw last night?
I taught Nick this. You know, as you go through life, you get more information, you can change your opinion. So right now, I got an NBA scout telling me, Chris, be careful. Really explosive last night. Also, it might be one of my brothers. My one brother and everything, Butch. Stop texting me too, bro. I'm listening to you. I'm in because I like the story. What I've seen not only last night, but in previous, the athleticism, you can see it there. Man, you don't see NBA guys crying. You don't see them. Dude dropped 50. There's a reason for that. He was almost out of basketball.
Listen.
I'm cheering for him.
I'm cheering for him. I want to be in, but I'm with Butch. I don't think this is sustainable in any way, shape, or form. Even going into last night's game, his previous two games, he was 9 of 29 from the field. So I have to be out. This is one of those times where I'm going to say on television, I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. Not enough to give a different opinion, but I hope I'm wrong. But no, I think I don't know if Derrick Rose will ever have a moment like this again, but I'm glad he got this moment.
Hope you're happy. He just texted Butch. Coming up, did LeBron silence the doubters last night? That's next. First things first.
Those three championships, four MVPs, game winners in the playoffs didn't silence nobody. But that free throw against the Mavs, zip it, y'all.
Back here on First Things First, we are going viral. Ooh, last night, LeBron dressed as Jason. Klay Thompson dressed as Jackie Moon from the movie Semi-Pro. A character made famous by Will Ferrell. And lastly, Victor Oladipo with a Black Panther costume.
That's a good one.
Guys went all out this year.
T'Challa for Oladipo. Klay's was the best. Here's the thing about wearing masks on Halloween. It always seems like a good idea. Then it's all hot. How many kids came by my house last night that had a Black Panther mask, something like that, and it was up on their head? Because you don't want to walk around wearing the mask. Klay Thompson had the right idea.
I really don't have a problem with the mask and everything. I just have a problem. I don't have a problem with men wearing dresses and everything.
Oh.
But when you have back hair and everything, hard. Like,
where should they go, see?
I mean, they need to go to European Wax and go somewhere. Do something about that. Like, even if it's just for one night. I don't mind you wearing a dress, but can you just tidy up?
C was out in the village last night, and there was a parade. Ooh. He had some grooming issues.
Time for stories to start your morning. The NBA's best team
Happy
won
Halloween,
again.
People.
Warriors beat the Pelicans 131-121. My guy Steph went off. Steph Curry, 37 points, 7 threes, 9 assists.
Man.
CeCe, how impressive has Steph been so far this season?
As impressive as anybody else in the NBA. And I know because they have such a riches of talent. Oh, none of these guys can win MVP. But Steph is a... I'm talking to your Steph. I'm texting her. But Steph Curry, he's going to have something to say about this.
All right, just for the record.
I'm texting Steph right now.
I get it. But mispronouncing his name because you're texting someone else also named
Steph. Also named Steph doesn't make sense.
Not an excuse.
No.
I didn't call him Steph because I was texting Steph. That don't make no sense. On the basketball side of things, he's been unbelievable. I didn't think it was possible for someone to have a better offensive year from range than Steph had his unanimous MVP year. Mm-hmm. Thus far this year, he's doing that. Thus far this year, he's been better than he was even his unanimous MVP year. He has been the best offensive player in the league so far this season by a decent margin.
All right, continue your texting. Jimmy Butler sat against the Jazz last night, conflicting reports as to why. Some said that this was the beginning of a huge holdout to force a trade. Butler said it was just because of general soreness. Nick, as someone who is generally sore, what did you make of all this?
This was great. This was because this was competing mentor versus mentee. It was Sham Sharania, who learned under the great Adrian Wojnarowski, who clearly had different sources. Shams was talking about from the Timberwolves side. Butler said, I don't want to play. Mm-hmm. This is the next step in his war to get traded. Woj came out and said, now, the team actually said Butler shouldn't play, but he's going to play this weekend against the Warriors. So I guess it depends on who you believe in this situation. Here's what I know in Minnesota. Tom Thibodeau's not trading him. unless the owner makes him. Tom Thibodeau knows that if he trades Jimmy Butler, whatever they get in return, he's probably not going to be around to coach it. So he wants to keep Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler's his type of guy. I wonder if the owner, Glenn Taylor, is going to force his hand.
No one's going to give him a better deal than what Houston already offered.
Four first-round picks.
The owner and Thibodeau, they're not going to come together. The owner needs to trade him.
Okay. All right, no Butler, no problem, at least for one night. Derrick Rose scored a career-high 50 points in a 128-125 win over the Jazz. The once bright star had fallen a long way since winning that 2011 MVP with Chicago. But last night, boy, he looked like vintage Derrick Rose. How impressive was he last night, Nick?
He was spectacular. See, he had more drives to the basket last night than any player had in any game all of last season. He was relentless and as good as we've seen him play in 7 years. I was so happy for Derrick Rose.
And I think people forget just how close and it was on the board for him to be out of basketball. Like, he's really struggled emotionally. He has a couple of things going on off the court. He had potentially the shoe deal where people were saying, he's only playing basketball because Adidas was still paying him this outrageous amount of money. I know he personally thought about quitting. So seeing him resurrect some of those highlights of the past, and he's been very, very good this season as far as his body. I'm looking forward to seeing if he can keep it going.
All right, on to the NFL now, where Deshaun Watson has a new weapon in Demaryius Thomas. The Texans have been on a roll, winning 5 straight games by a combined 45 points. Deshaun Watson says he's very excited for the arrival of Thomas. See, how much will Demaryius Thomas help Watson and the Texans?
I hope he can help him an awful lot. This is one of those situations where I don't know how the player's going to respond in the new offense, in the new environment there in Houston. I just believe Deshaun Watson will trust him a lot because he's the big guy. My problem with Demaryius is not that his play has gone down, but he's a big guy that if you don't play big, I mean, what good is your
size?
What
does that mean to you?
I'm talking about play physical, 50-50 balls. He's never one of the top 10 guys in the NFL. Being physical, coming across the middle, when you have that type of size, that's one of the things you're supposed to provide. He doesn't do that. So it's not as if he's dominant in the run game where you're going to motion him inside and go in and dig out a linebacker like Larry Fitzgerald does. So he's a guy that has tremendous size, but he doesn't utilize it. So will Bill O'Brien, will Deshaun Watson allow him to play a role where he can be a physical receiver like Devin Funchess there in Carolina? Mm-hmm. He's a big guy. Mike Evans there in Tampa Bay, big. Mike Williams there for the Chargers. Big guys still playing big. This is a big guy who once played big, but he hadn't played big of late.
Demaryius Thomas, this is his opportunity to prove to everyone he's not just a wide receiver, Julius Thomas. And why do I bring that name up? That's a guy who, with Peyton Manning and the Broncos, was a star at tight end. Looked like one of the best tight ends in football for a few years. And then, because he looked so good, he got a free agent contract elsewhere. When was the last time anybody heard from Julius Thomas? He was created by Peyton Manning. Now, we know Demaryius has a higher skill level than that.
Yes.
But with Peyton, he was one of the best in the league. He was in that discussion. It was around the time Dez Bryant was one of the best in the league.
Yep.
And they were neck and neck for who's the best big play, not big play, but big wide receiver to make those big plays, those contested catches. Not necessarily going to kill you with straight line speed, but a guy who can make those, have 1,500-yard seasons. Since Peyton's been gone, they've had awful quarterback play, and he hasn't necessarily helped that much. I know he's had 1,000 yards on average, but given the fact that he's also averaged over 100 targets per season, that's about the minimum level of production given all the opportunities. This will obviously be the best quarterback he's had since Peyton Manning's second to last year in Denver. What he does for the Texans, though, is to me more important than what the Texans do for him. He is still a legitimate threat to a degree. And if they had not replaced Will Fuller with anything, then the entire field would look like it was tilted on its axis towards DeAndre Hopkins. DeAndre Hopkins can deal with bad quarterback play. We've seen him do with it. No wide receiver can deal with being double teamed every single snap of the game. So Demaryius is going to make it so that's harder to do. And the Texans had to replace Will Fuller somehow because their next option was not a great option. The Kiki QTs, their slot receiver, can't play on the outside. So I get why the Texans did this. For a team that thinks they can get to 10, 11 wins, this was an important addition.
All right, let's get back to some basketball now. Big game on the night in the NBA. LeBron and the Lakers in need of a win facing Luka Doncic and the Mavericks last night. Under 5 minutes to go, LeBron, watch, spins, finishes in transition, 2 of his 29. Lakers up 14. Seems like a lock. But here come the Mavs. Doncic, the three. Dallas with an eight. Under 30 seconds to go. Mavs down four. Doncic finds Harrison Barnes in the corner for three. Now under 10 seconds left. Doncic drives, ties up the game at 113, 9 of his 14 in the final quarter. After being fouled, LeBron at the line, 2 seconds left, misses the first one. Let's go, LeBron. Collects himself, focus, deep breath, and he makes the second. Lakers go on to win 114-113. Here's LeBron James on the Lakers learning to finally close out games.
I'm extremely happy we're going through it. There's no, you can talk about it, you can preach about it, you can watch film about it, but the best teacher in life is experience. And it's great that these young guys are getting this experience of playing these tight, closed games, and then tonight we was on the other side of it. We lost a couple when we were, you know, same one was the same situation against San Antonio, we lost. Same situation happened tonight, we won. So it was great to learn from it.
All right, see, it was a great win for the Lakers, but are you worried at all that they almost blew a big fourth quarter lead to the Mavericks?
I'm not worried, but you have to have concerns with there were some things there that you started. Lack of focus. They came out the game, blitzed them. They played unbelievable first quarter. Hitting shots, moving the ball around. Very, very exciting for the Lakers playing there at home. But then they give up 38 points. It's like all the everything the coach told them, we're going to concentrate on defense going into the game. Second quarter, it was like, hey, we're not going to. They give up 38 points. And then in the fourth quarter, to allow them to get back into the game after having a 19-point lead early in the game, they give up another 32. So in the second and in the fourth, they give up 38 and 32. You can't be a good team in the Western Conference and give up those types of buckets. And LeBron, it seemed like it was intentional. After the third quarter where he was dominant, he came out and was dominant, initiating the offense, very, very aggressive in the fourth quarter, very passive, allowing the young players to try to finish out the game for which they struggled with. What happened? The Mavericks come back, tie it up, and then the Lakers end up winning at the end. But I didn't like the fact that the young players didn't play as well at the end of the game, because that's one of their goals going in. Play better defense and finish out games. The finishing part and the defense part, they were spotty in both areas.
Listen, this was almost, for 44 minutes, this was going to be the Lakers, one of their two most complete wins of the year, both against bad teams, Phoenix and Dallas. And it almost turned into their single worst loss of the year. Would have been worse than the loss against the Spurs where LeBron missed those free throws, because they were up 14 with 4.5 left. They were up 13 with 3.5 left. The Mavericks never forget having a lead. They never were tied in the game until 113-113 with 7 seconds left. They got lucky that Wes Matthews made a boneheaded play going for a steal or didn't know the score, thought they had a foul to give. I don't know what Wes Matthews was doing where he fouled LeBron. Now, LeBron had him beat and was going to get a good shot at a runner, similar to the shot he beat Toronto within the playoffs, just from the opposite side of the court. But you can't foul in a tie game with 2 seconds left, and LeBron makes that second free throw to win. But here are the concerns to me, big picture-wise. Defensively, the Lakers in the fourth quarter, once they got that lead, their transition defense was an abomination. And JaVale McGee, because they don't have a backup big man, is out there. They don't want to play Kuzma at center. They don't want to play LeBron at center in big minutes at all. So they have JaVale out there. JaVale has a running hook shot when they have a big lead early in the shot clock, then doesn't get back in defense. Then the next possession down, doesn't rotate on a three-pointer. Like, JaVale had an awful three-play stretch that was a seven-point swing. And LeBron, last year, with Kevin Love injured, or Kevin Love in and out of the lineup, I should say, Kyrie gone, LeBron took it upon himself on an under-talented team to control every aspect of late games, of close games late. And because of that, he led the league in fourth quarter shooting and fourth quarter points and clutch PR, all of these things. With the Lakers thus far this year, he is not treating the end of games any different than any other part of the game. Just run the offense, whoever has the ball is fine, let the young guys learn. Well, that almost cost them the game last night. LeBron had two possessions during this run where he controlled the ball. He got a layup that he missed and a jump shot that he missed. But at least even on those plays, LeBron knows. He took those with zero on the shot clock, with two on the shot clock. He understands you're playing the clock and your opponent. The best offense for the Lakers late is spot up in the corner, guys. I'm either going to beat my guy and get to the rim, or I'm going to find you for an open jump shot. I don't think the Lakers think, see, that's the best offense for the development of the players, but you got to win games. They almost lost this game trying to toy with things. Now, if their defense had been better, it wouldn't have been an issue, but on the offensive end, LeBron can fix that, and he didn't last night.
No, he didn't. He didn't, but I just, as a young team, we still have to give them, it's about the first 20 games. After the first 20 games, we should be able to have some type of blueprint. It's a small sample size, but we can start drawing conclusions. But they got to get better on the defensive end, especially playing in the West. You can't outscore the shooters that they have in the Western Conference.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up, are the Eagles back to being Super Bowl contenders after their deal for Golden Tate? That's next on First Things First. Check out Thursday Night Football when the Raiders take on the 49ers. It all starts at 7:30 Eastern on Fox, NFL Network, and streaming on Prime Video. Back here with Chris Caney, Eagles general manager Howie Roseman has a message to Eagles fans. We want to win today. This on the heels of the team trading for veteran receiver Golden Tate. Roseman said Tate fits what the team does offensively and who the team is character-wise. After a relatively shaky start to the season, it seems like the defending champion Eagles are all in for a push this season. Here's Roseman on giving up a third-round pick for Tate.
That's the cost of doing business in this day and age, and the market sets what the price is, and you could try to win the trade, or you can try to get really good players. And for us, our commitment to our fans, to our ownership, to Jeffrey, to our coaching staff, to our players, is our foot's going to be on the gas. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to be trying to win every year. At the same time, we have a bunch of picks next year. We understand we have a 25-year-old quarterback, but the only year we can win is this year, right now. And we have our eye on both things at the same time. You know, we're doing parallel tracks. We're doing whatever we can to win this year, but we're not going to sacrifice the future.
All right, Chris, were the Eagles one Golden Tate, one wide receiver away from putting it all together? Is this the year they could win the Super Bowl with who they have right now?
Well, I thought they needed to address the running back position at the trade deadline. They needed to give Carson Wentz a little more balance, take some pressure off him. But I guess they weren't able to do that. The asking price might have been too high in Buffalo. So I think this is the next best thing. I think adding Golden Tate to that skill position core, I think helps them in a lot of different ways. But when you look at the X's and O's, I think specifically he helps them with yards after catch. He gets a lot of yak. And I ain't talking about that stuff that Uncle Shea Sharp drinks. I'm talking about yards after catch. So in the short passing game, he can be a factor. You can use that as an extension of the running game. And I think that's exactly how Doug Peterson will deploy him. He's going to give him a lot of versatility. He can play the Z. He can play the slot opposite of Alshon Jeffrey. So, I mean, there are a lot of different things that Golden Tate can do from an X's and O's standpoint. But also, he does provide an element of toughness that they're missing. He's a tough dude. He puts you in that ilk of a Steve Smith or a Hines Ward. He's that kind of tough guy at the wide receiver position. And they really haven't had a lot of tough guys. When they lost Jay Ajayi, they lost LeGarrette Blount. That element is missing offensively. So I think he brings that to the table as well. That's why I think it's a good fit.
Listen, the points on yards after catch is key. He is as good as any wide receiver in the league at that. And here are the bottom six teams in the league this year at wide receiver and tight end yards after catch. Bills, Cardinals, Colts, Bears, Washington, and the Eagles. So it is something they need. Their offense, you've explained, is one that is designed to exploit yards after catch with the short passing game, the short quick passes. We see that with the Saints a lot, the way their guys run after catch, whether it's Kamara, Michael Thomas. Mm-hmm. The Eagles have not had a guy this year who's been great at that. So it is a position of need that it's not square peg, round hole. It is square peg, square hole. Like, it is exactly the type of player that you want. I believe the Eagles' problems right now are a little more systemic. I think last year they played a little bit over their skis, particularly once Carson Wentz went down. I think that their offensive line was good, that played great, and now it's got good personnel that's playing. It's gone the other way, that's playing below their abilities. I thought their secondary, we had questions about their secondary going into the year, midway through the year, and even late in the year, and they were able to overcome it. Those issues they have not yet this year been able to fully overcome, and where they were elite was in the red zone and on third down. They've been good in those areas this year. Red zone average, third down better than average, but not top three in the league. Golden Tate will help those things, But I don't think he fixes those things. The way the Eagles get back to Super Bowl contention is Lane Johnson, when healthy, starts playing better. Jason Peters, as you've pointed out, looks anything like what he looked like before his injury. That D-line gets to being the best in the league again, not just one of the good D-lines. Those are the bigger issues I think Philadelphia has that Tate doesn't address, but I do really like the move for them.
And there's no team that's sitting around 4-4, 5-3, 3-5, you're around 500 after eight. There's no team that's one player away from the Super Bowl, so I don't think it's fair. And anyone that's trying to analyze Philadelphia based on who they were last year, look at where they were last year at this time. Were we talking about them being Super Bowl champs?
No.
The only reason why we're talking about now because they went on this unbelievable run. But offensively, their left tackle's got to get better. Jason Peters, physically, I don't know where he is as an athlete. He's trying to overcome several injuries, but he has not been, forget about a Pro Bowl player. He can't even start and finish the games. Lane Johnson, as good as he's been. Oh, it's fun to play in Philadelphia. It ain't fun when you're playing like garbage. And Lane is playing like garbage. Him and his agent, they was on shows and everything. Because he said, I'm the best tackle in football. Lane, no, you're not. So that's not a Golden Tate, something that he can cure. They've got to play better. They have to try to create momentum going into the playoffs, a lot like when you won your Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So I'm not thinking about Super Bowl aspiration, but who is Golden Tate? He is another version of Anquan Boldin or Pierre Garçon. He's heavy through his legs. He is a guy that can catch the ball in short space and make the first guy almost every time miss. He's not Julian Edelman. He's better than him. He's not just a slot receiver. He can play the boundary or he can play the flanker. I believe he's a great addition to what the Eagles are trying to do, though.
So, Chris, how does Golden Tate make Carson Wentz better?
Well, I think he's going to take some pressure off of Wentz because the short passing game is almost like having a handoff. It takes pressure off your quarterback. You're not asking him to drop back and have to go through a progression. It's really just a dump off. Some of the things that they've already done in their offense, some of the short passes, the RPOs, Golden Tate will be a great fit for that. But beyond just that, I look at him being able to provide a spark for this team.
Yes.
And I think Howie
Roseman has a fiery personality.
It's a lot like what we see teams in baseball do at the trade deadline. You'll see general managers get aggressive and make a move because they want to send a message to the locker room. And I think Howie Roseman sends a message to this team. We're always going to be aggressive because we expect to compete at a championship caliber level. I think Golden Tate, from an on-the-field production standpoint, helps them do that. And from a culture in the locker room, helps them do that as well.
Yeah,
so I really like that move.
Yeah, let's not forget, though, this offense has been disjointed. Injuries to the running back, injuries to the left tackle. And we saw Kelsey miss some time the other night. Lane's missed some time injured. And Carson Wentz didn't start the season.
Right. Yep.
Alshon didn't start the season.
Right.
And then now they bring in Golden Tate. So it's going to take at least another month where they were already trying to get some chemistry, trying to build some rapport. So this is still going to take some time. So this is not, you know, instant grits. You're like, you can just, hey, put some hot water in it. No, you need to put some love into it. You know, it needs a little salt, dash of salt, need a little butter in there.
My Cousin Vinny reference. I really like that.
Nice.
Whether you recognize it or not.
Oh, I make good grits.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, but not instant grits.
Yeah, no, not instant grits.
No self-respect in Southern.
No, if you want to rush me, though, I can give you something to eat. All right?
But a quick point, CC, and you talked about this, not having the conversation about them being Super Bowl contenders. I will say this. Even though they're 500, they do have the quarterback that's playing the best in their division, and they still got five division games left.
Right.
So I think there's an opportunity for them to win the division and host the first home playoff
game. Those non-division games are monsters, though. At the Saints, at the Rams, and home for the Texans. So they got to do well
win
in those
division
games.
Win your division.
You know who likes grits? The Utes.
The Utes.
Well
the
done, Utes. Jenna. Nice. Take a break. Coming up, Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers.
The
Who's the best? Rodgers weighs in next on First Things
I'm just guessing, Jenna.
No.
But you're a Marissa Tomei fan.
Love Marissa Tomei.
Yeah, I figured.
Me and George Costanza. Coming up at 9 Eastern, Blake Griffin is hanging with us in studio. Plenty to talk about with Blake. That's at 9 Eastern, about a half hour on First Things First.
Cannot wait to talk to Blake Griffin. Having an excellent year. Had a 50-point game earlier.
All right, time for us to go viral. Check this out. Texans wideout DeAndre Hopkins dressed up as an avatar for Halloween. I mean, that takes work, effort.
It's a brilliant makeup job by whatever makeup artist did it. That is a spectacular costume.
I love the commitment to the costume, though. That's going all in for Halloween.
I mean, look at them side by side, man. That's great.
Yeah, that's pretty spot on. The ears are a little off, though.
He overdid the ears, oddly enough.
Yeah, he's got a Lord of the Rings thing going with the ears, but pretty close.
I will tell you, pretty close. Your wife actually did really great with her makeup.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it.
I mean, she didn't do it herself, but
that's what I'm saying. Neither did he. It was a really good job.
Jeff Sessions should have gone as him. Wouldn't have to do anything to the ears.
What about Josh Rosen?
That's more appropriate.
Oh, the ears? Okay, fair enough. That's what I meant.
Both true, but that being said. Back here with Chris Kenny, this weekend's marquee matchup in the NFL will take place in New England. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers visit Tom Brady and the Patriots. Their first meeting since 2014, their second meeting ever. So one's got the rings and the records, the other arguably the most talented. But despite what you see at a zoo, Chris Kenny, there can only be one goat.
It's a good joke.
It's twice. Who's had a better career? Just ask Aaron Rodgers.
It's tough to settle any of those debates because there's the what-if game and the situation game and who you played for and what era you played in. And I'm just worried about winning right now. And he's got 5 championships, so that ends most discussions, I think.
All right, Chris Kenny, what puts Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady so far above the rest of the quarterbacking field, not just this year but in years past as well?
Well, I think we all recognize that they're great quarterbacks, but when you look at Aaron Rodgers specifically, I mean, there's nothing at the quarterback position that he can't do. In terms of a skill set, like if you were talking about baseball and making that analogy, he's a 5-tool player. There's nothing at the quarterback position that's required that Aaron Rodgers cannot do. So that's what makes him special, whether it's extending plays, buying time, whether it's operating from the
pocket. So he's the Mike Trout.
He's the Mike Trout.
Okay.
He's the Mike Trout.
Pure God-given talent. He's got it all.
He's got it all. I mean, if he's got to put touch on it, if he's got to gun it in there, he can do all of those things. So from that perspective, he's an elite quarterback, probably the best the game has ever seen. But when you look at Tom Brady, he doesn't necessarily have the mobility that Aaron Rodgers does, but the competitive greatness aspect of him being at his best when his best is required. Tom Brady in the regular season and postseason combined has 43 fourth quarter comebacks. So by contrast, and I know he's got 7 more seasons than Aaron Rodgers has 14. So, I mean, just to put that into context, that shows how great Tom Brady is. Both of them are special quarterbacks, but if you're asking me which one is the GOAT, I got to give the edge to the guy that has the rings, and that's Tom Brady.
Yeah, that's not a real question, you know, as far as do we really think someone can come up with an argument. I'm going to go to a position I'm more familiar with, and I'm going to use Randy Moss. And Randy Moss is the most talented wide receiver that I've worked with, seen with, practiced with, and I've practiced with all the guys. I played in the 80s, 90s, and in 2000. Played in 3 different decades.
And you coached a lot of the guys playing right now.
Yeah, so I was on the practice field at a number of Pro Bowls with Jerry Rice and Michael Irvin, Andre Rison, and the greatest that ever played in that era, Tim Brown, Andre Reed, all of them. And Randy Moss is the most talented guy that I've ever seen at wide receiver. He can do things that I've never seen anyone do. But he's not the best wide receiver. Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback. He's just like Randy Moss. He is rare. He is a rare, rare type of athlete. But he's not the best quarterback. Jerry Rice is the best wide receiver. And Tom Brady is the best quarterback. Not just because of one thing they do. It's the totality of what they do and what they've done. With all the skills that they have, they are not the most athletic. They are not the smartest. Now, both of them had in common is great situations. Greatest coach, Bill Walsh. Greatest coach, Bill Belichick. Besides that,
and the
Lombardi. Those are the coaches you talk about in the great conversation. Yep.
And the opportunity to create iconic moments in big games.
And they never got satisfied with what they were doing. They tricked themselves to believing they weren't as good. And both of them thrived as far as conditioning, taking care of their body, that part that they have won over, and it's extended their career. So for me, that's what I believe. You look at athleticism, Randy Moss is the most gifted wide receiver, and Aaron Rodgers is the most gifted thrower. But the most accomplished quarterback and a guy who took advantage of all the situations, that's who Tom Brady is, and that's who Jerry Rice is.
Listen, go ahead, Jenna.
No, I, I was just going to ask, how much of who they turned into was because of the situation they came into?
So, you see, you say 99% of guys in the league are system players.
Yes,
there's
absolutely.
A few rare. You said yourself, as a Hall of Famer, you were a system player. You needed to go to Minnesota, be put in the slot, get the opportunity to show the different things you could do to extend your career as long as it did. So it's not a knock. But there is 99% means there's 1% left over. That's Lawrence Taylor.
Yep.
That's Barry Sanders.
Yep.
I believe that's Aaron Rodgers.
I agree with you.
Because I think Aaron Rodgers actually did not go to a beneficial system or place. First of all, he's outdoors in Green Bay. And that is, if you talk about where do you want to play quarterback, I know Favre was amazing there.
There in Buffalo are the worst two spots if you were looking to, as far as conditions to throw the football.
And conditions put up gaudy numbers. It's one thing to win, like to have the fan base, but to put up gaudy numbers. He also... You don't want to be the guy to replace a guy. You want to be the guy that replaces the guy that replaced the guy. Mm-hmm. He replaced a legend. A legend who was coming off a 13-3 season. People forget this.
Yes.
2007, Favre's last year. How about 13-3 NFC Championship game overtime loss to the New York Giants? Like, that's who he replaced, and it's not because the guy retired. It's because Favre was and then the organization said, we're moving on. Those are incredibly adverse circumstances. Brady came in the opposite. Fans in New England were upset with Drew Bledsoe. He had been 21-25 the previous 3 years. They had underachieved. He had just gotten this massive contract.
Yes,
Mo Lewis knocks him out. So it's, they didn't even have an option to go back to Bledsoe for a while. And he had this excellent defense and this coach that was becoming who he was. Brady didn't have to. I mean, that first Super Bowl, he threw one touchdown pass the whole playoff run. And so he came into a perfect circumstance where he was allowed to have 5 years to turn into the player that he is now.
Yep.
And in those 5 years, they won three Super Bowls. And it was a similar – I bring up the Kobe Bryant clutch stuff sometimes. Because even though I take shots at Kobe because it's fun, he obviously is one of the all-time killers in league history.
Yes.
One of the reasons he was that is because he was never had hanging around his neck, not a champ. Because he walks into a situation with Shaq. That first year with Shaq, they win a ring because Shaq's the best player in the world. So he gets that imbued upon him. Brady had a similar thing. He's always going to be a champion. The debate was Brady v. Manning, right? And it was the knock on Peyton. I can't win big. Might have better numbers, might have better arm. But Brady. So Brady walked into a perfect circumstance, made the most out of it. Rodgers, I think, could have walked into any circumstance and become Aaron Rodgers.
Chris Kenny, what if you switch those two? Would the career paths be different?
I don't know how much they would be different because although I do acknowledge what Nick is saying about the situation that Brady stepped into versus what Aaron Rodgers stepped into, both of them were with stable organizations. And I think that's probably the most important part when you talk about sustained excellence at the quarterback position. Now, when you look at Tom Brady, I give a lot of credit of what happened in the last couple of decades to Tom Brady, probably even more so than Bill Belichick, because even though Belichick is a great head coach, if you don't have the best player on the team reinforcing the messaging coming from the head coach to the rest of the guys in the locker room, the other 52, then you're probably going to have a problem with developing the culture that the coach wants to implement. So that's why I look at Tom Brady and say what he's done in New England is invaluable. So when you see that gaffe that Ty Montgomery had on Sunday, bringing that kickoff out of the end zone, you never hear about Patriots doing that. Now, everybody says that's because of Bill Belichick, but I also think that's because Tom Brady has a certain standard that he expects, and he holds everybody in that locker room accountable for that. I don't think it's a coincidence that we saw Aaron Rodgers trying to hold his teammates accountable going back to training camp, talking about the wide receivers not giving a good look on the scout team, demanding more from everybody in that locker room. I don't think that's happenstance. I think Aaron Rodgers is looking at his career mortality after what happened last year and recognizing if he wants to capitalize on these last years that he has in the NFL, he's got to take a page out of Tom Brady's book and be more of a factor in terms of setting the standard.
I believe in fate and destiny. I don't believe in luck. There's one time when I was trying to decide as an accomplished high school basketball player and football player, I was trying to decide and I was very confused at where I was going to go to school. And I asked my mom and I said, Mom, no one ever asked you where I'm going to go to school. And she said, baby, I'm so glad. I was the second youngest of seven kids. She said, I'm so glad. No one ever asked me if I wanted to tell you this. I had a dream. One of my boys went to Ohio State. And on that day at the living room table in the housing project, I decided I was going to go to Ohio State. And I would say that the history was set. I believe that Tom Brady was supposed to go to Belichick because he changed Belichick. I believe Michael Jordan was supposed to be drafted by the Bulls and be left at the airport where some random guy picked him up and was able to take him to the office. They didn't even send a limousine for him. So I believe that the best of the best, when you're supposed to go somewhere. Now, are you going to do what you're supposed to do? I believe you're supposed to sit behind Favre. And Brett Favre and set that example. Brett Favre raised the bar for him that once Aaron came in, Aaron tried to hold it. So I believe in more of a destiny to the greatest players ever.
I just want to show the audience why this is a debate and then why it's not a debate. The reason this is a debate is here's what Rodgers versus Brady do on an average year. Here's the average season. Both are amazing, but Rodgers has him beat in every single category along the right-hand side. So that's why you can have this discussion. Mm-hmm. But here's why it's not a debate. Here's what they've done in the totality of their careers. Wow. And I know Brady's had more time, but it's disproportionate to this. Ooh. And that bottom line, there's nothing Rodgers can do to ever come close to. Like, I mean, every single thing. And the most interesting line on there was, if you saw the record, Brady's got 105 more wins, mm-hmm. only 6 more losses. Mm. Think about that. So if Rodgers can go 105-6 the next, that'd be 7 years, he can come close. But, like, so that's why the totality of it is always going to tilt in Brady's favor, no matter how long Rodgers plays.
Such an interesting debate. Chris, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Much appreciated, as always. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody. Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.